Welcome to Film Forum's podcast. The following event was recorded on June 28, 2012, live at our theaters located at 209 West Houston Street in Manhattan.
Please welcome the curator of the Artists' President, Klaus Biesenbach. Well, I just want to say thanks so much for coming tonight, Klaus. And since you are the curator of this show, I just thought maybe we could start by talking a little bit about how logistically you approached this exhibition. I imagine that a show where you have an artist in the museum for 7.5 hours a day for 3 months must have raised a lot of safety concerns and logistical concerns from the museum. And I'm just wondering how that was approached.
First of all, as a curator, you have to clarify, we are not here looking at Marina's art. We're not here watching a performance by Marina Abramović. We just watched a work of art by Matthew Akers and Jeff Dupree. We're in a movie theater. We just watched a great movie. And I think that is the most stunning. If you watch a movie, you see, he's the director who did the movie. And here it goes right into, oh, let's talk about Marina. But there are two artists, Jeff and Matthew Akers, who did this. And I think it's pretty amazing. I was so annoyed by the filmmakers. Marina loved it. You get my key. You can come at 6. You can sleep overnight. You can surprise me. Whatever. You can film anything. Bathtub, toilet. And I just thought it's so annoying. And we normally don't allow filmmakers for art projects. And so, and basically every artist, every project comes with a documentary right now, and every artist brings kind of a film team. And I remember we did Olafur Eliasson, and we had a camera on us all the time, and I learned from Olafur to never do that again. So I told Matthew and Jeff that they had twice an hour during the course of the show, where if you see the interviews, there are actually only two scenes. One is in the MoMA PS1 office, and one is in the MoMA office, and they only had 2 hours. And it's very, very intrusive to allow this. Marina loves it.
You mean interviews with you?
No, it's very intrusive to have a film team around in a museum exhibition that's so challenging. Mm-hmm. So it's actually, I think what Matthew and Jeff did is quite a miracle that they got this out of this and that they trick you into thinking that you were witnessing Marina's performance because you were not. And I think that's actually quite an achievement that the film kind of really accomplishes. So I'm quite very impressed by that.
Yeah, I mean, as well. And I'm just actually curious, how many people in the theater attended the MoMA exhibition?
Oh, wow.
That's about at least 3/4 of the audience, I think.
But that's what Marina says. 750,000 people, that's nearly a million. The very funny thing about Marina is she can't spell and she can't calculate. And I know her so well, and we know each other so well, so we are each other's beloved enemy and beloved friend. So she says this about me, of course, as well. She knows all my faults, but it's so charming. It's exactly how she is. She thinks, oh, 750,000 people, that's nearly a million. And so that's perhaps part of the reason.
Well, I'd like to get to the audience. If you have a question, just raise your hand, and we're going to pass a microphone around so everyone can hear.
Hello. I'm curious how she convinced you that she can make her exhibition in the NoMA Museum.
There are a couple of loops when you think who's convincing whom, and it's very important that when you talk to somebody, it's always important that when it's a very hard sell, that the other side kind of thought it was their idea. So that's when the show opens, there were dozens of basically naked people upstairs and like rotating. We had 37 re-performers, and of course you saw luminosity with the person on a bicycle seat, and you saw imponderabilia with two people that you have to go between and cross. And I remember the night of the opening, everybody said, oh God, there are all these naked people at MoMA on 53rd Street in the United States, in New York, where everybody from Europe, of course, thinks that the United States are so prudish and afraid of any bikini on the beach or whatever. So, and there it was full frontal nudity on a bicycle chair, like on above your head. And actually, I think Marina and I did not think about that. Mm-hmm. And we were surprised that people even mentioned it at the opening and questioned it. And I think since Marina and I didn't question it, nobody at MoMA questioned it. It was half a year before the show, I had invited Marina to our trustee meeting. And there's Mr. Rockefeller and Mrs. Gunt and like the whole trustees. She gives a presentation and she makes everybody look into the person left or right into their eyes for like 10 minutes. I was like,
they wow. They went along with that?
I thought, wow, that was my last day in the museum. And then she made everybody shout as loud as they could. But somehow she did this with the guards, she did this with the staff, she did this with the curators, she did this with everybody. And I think at the day of the opening, we also had a curatorial workshop for 2 years, inviting like 100 artists and curators and thinking about how can you do a retrospective of performance art. So I think at the night of the opening, I think we as the museum felt it was our show, not her show. Mm-hmm. And when you say, was it hard to sell in this way? No. But it was a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Right down here in the glasses. But we want to make sure everyone can hear you. Can hear your question.
Artwork is Sean Kelly editions, anything that's going to come out of the show as a testimony, any videos, any prints, any photographs that people are going to be able to maybe collect, buy.
It's actually interesting because we thought we thought we would tour the show. Because it's a new commission, her sitting in the atrium, of course, it's a new work, it's a new commission. We thought we would tour the show. And Marina wanted to do a self-portrait in the atrium. And she's 66 now, so she wanted to have one shelf that's her 0 years, one shelf that's her teens, one shelf that's her 20s. So it was the 7 decades of her life. She wanted to start all the way up, all the way on the top of the atrium. And she wanted to start with her holding a skeleton and a huge kind of wind machine. And so she would slowly come down the 7 shelves until she arrives on the bottom of the atrium. And Marina went through a divorce and a very, very sad and critical time in her life, the 3 years before the performance and before her retrospective. And if you do a retrospective that makes the artist, the artist has to be there. Mm-hmm. We thought she couldn't do it because she had such a dramatic time in her life. And so we actually thought we would offer her to not do it or delay it. And I remember a year before the performance, we went to the DR Art Foundation in Beacon. And so there was a benefit and everybody has like a lunch. But we didn't, we had like planned we would go a later train. So everybody was gone and we were kind of locked up in Beacon. And so we looked at the Solur, the wall drawings, and I remember that she was in a very emotional state and she started crying and she said, it's so simple and it's so beautiful. And then she was still with the Solur and I had climbed over this little fence where the Michael Heitzer, the negative forms were. And since there were no guards, I kind of climbed up and there is this square, how do you call it, a negative space, a cube going, how do you call that? Like?
Oh, you mean under...
It's a negative. It's a cube that sunk into the ground, basically.
Navarro is an artist that does that.
No, it's a Michael Heitzer sculpture, and they have these. They have a circular one, a triangular one, and a square one.
It's a void.
Yeah, it's a void in the shape of a cube. And I had climbed over the little fence, and I sat, because there was nobody not making me not do this, I sat on that edge of the void, and Marina came up, and she said, don't fall. I said, no, I'm not going to fall. Why don't you sit with me? We looked into the void, and I said, Marina, that's the atrium, and you are down there on the ground. And that triggered, she had done with Ulay a performance in Japan, where she always sat with Ulay 90 days, but not consecutive 90 days, chair, table, and they traveled the world. They were everywhere. They were the New Museum in Berlin, in Stedelijk Museum, and Documenta. They traveled the world with this performance. And Ulay had a dream when they were flying to Japan. He had a dream that in Japan they have to do it in a negative space. So what he did, he carved out a cube into the earth, and they put the chair and the two chairs and the table into that negative cube, and they sat there for like 9 days or so. And so that triggered Marina looking into that negative space in Michael Heitzer's sculpture, and all of a sudden the shelves, we had already put iron into the wall to keep the shelves stable, and that made her kind of completely change it and look at this performance that is so simple. And when you say, what can you sell? 2 years later, so we wanted to tour this, but then she did it for 90 days. You cannot do that again. She cannot. So cancel. Show didn't go. We toured it to Moscow, and she presented all the people that sat with her each day, one projection, and then all faces of the people that sat with her that day. And an empty chair, two empty chairs and an empty table in the middle. But I don't think that this is a performance. So when you say what comes out of the show, I actually think it's more like a fable or an urban myth or a movie or we talking about it. I think there is not a work that documents this. But that's a subjective view.
Yeah, right here.
Watching the film made me curious. What did she do on Tuesdays, on her so-called day off, I guess? Was she at the museum still, or do you have any insight into that?
It was actually quite dramatic, her schedule, because first of all, what the movie doesn't capture, and that's actually quite great, is was incredibly bright. And so the first 5 days, she thought she couldn't continue because it was too bright and her eyes were completely dry. So we had the first Tuesday was eye doctor. So we had to find her somebody who had a magic something to make her sit the second week. And then 3 weeks into the performance, she realized that she totally forgot an armrest. Just imagine you would sit and you have an armrest. You have you're resting your arms. But she forgot the armrest when she designed the chair. So her arm was always... And that's very, very bad for the circulation. And it's very bad for your... So I think she was in pain from the second week onwards because it was literally kind of impossible to sit there. So she drank every full hour at night so she wouldn't have to drink during the day. And as she had reversed the rhythm of drinking, she had also reversed the rhythm of going to the bathroom. So if you think about you're not going to the bathroom between 10 p.m. and 8 in the morning, she had reversed this. But she had reversed this in an X because she was awake, of course. So she didn't have to drink, she didn't have to eat, and she didn't have to go to the bathroom a single time in these 3 months. But she had to drink every hour and discipline to do all these functions at night. Then she got up at 6, she had a trainer, and she had massages. And on Tuesday, she would literally run up and down the Hudson Piers and have a trainer, have massages, and get her whole system somehow worked that she wouldn't collapse. And I think the last month, she was literally collapsing. And I think you asked before, what did you do to convince the museum to do it? What did you do to convince Marina to do it? So... I think Marina is a character that wouldn't give up. So you saw that work where she's in the star where the gasoline is on fire and there's no oxygen and she loses her consciousness and she is like this. So she wouldn't give up. She would die in the performance. And so I think that's perhaps an answer.
Any others right here in the glasses?
Most of your comments that I recall in the film were comments about this love relationship that Marina exudes towards others, that they take personally, and that you've also had. Can you talk a little bit about that, this idea of this love?
I think as a curator, you have to think about what is actually the product of an artist and what are the parameters or criteria. And I know that in America, in this culture, it's very difficult to talk about things in a simplistic or more simple way, to just abstract them a bit. So I think in German it would be easier to reduce everything to values like, say, oh, if you think about a work of art, it's about a certain eternal truth and beauty. And that does not sound embarrassing in German. And I know it sounds embarrassing in English. So I'm just saying it with a caveat. But what is it that makes a work of art not age and keep its value and its subversity and its disruptive nature and its seductive nature? You are in an Italian chapel and you see kind of a Caravaggio painting. And of course, it's incredibly seductive and it's incredibly disturbing. And so I think with an artist like Marina, talk about truth and beauty, I'm not talking about this, but definitely the product is about a seductive beauty. And so I remember when I proposed the exhibition to MoMA, I said, oh, I have to make a disclosure. I know her a little bit too well. And I think that most people who know her think they know her a little bit too well. But it's exactly about that boundary that she oversteps. She oversteps with her curator. She oversteps with the plumber that comes to her house. She oversteps it with the art critic from the New York Times. She is literally overstepping it, and that's what she does. She gets against that border of pain, of physical kind of barriers of her body, but she sees that also as kind of a seductive barrier. And I think her art is about that. So, of course, you talk about other things in interviews and then they cut and edit, right? So we talked about other things too.
Thank you for listening to Film Forum's podcast. Visit us online at filmforum.org, where you can learn more about our films, memberships, subscribe to our free weekly e-newsletter, and to find out the ways you can support our nonprofit cinema. And if you have the time, please visit our iTunes page and leave a rating and review of our podcasts. Copyright to this program belongs to The Moving Image Incorporated.